This is Free Thought Radio with co-hosts Dan Barker and Annie Laurie Gaylor. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews.
Imagine there's no heaven. It's easy if you try.
Kia ora! That's a warm Māori greeting from New Zealand to everyone, including the faithless Kiwis who faithfully listen to Free Thought Radio. I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor, and welcome to our show.
And good day, mate, and welcome to all you Aussies who are also listening to our show. I'm Dan Barker, your friendly neighborhood atheist of the airwaves. This show is airing on the weekend of March the 27th, 2010. This show, Free Thought Radio, is the weekly production of the Freedom From Religion Foundation. We're the nation's largest organization of atheists and agnostics. We work to educate the public about the views of non-believers and to keep state and church separate.
And as you may have guessed from our greetings, Dan and I have recently visited New Zealand. And Dan also got to spend an additional week stumping for atheism in Australia.
And we'll talk more about that in a minute. Coming up in the second half of Free Thought Radio will be our guest, Ryan Valentine, Deputy Director of the Texas Freedom Network. We're going to talk with Ryan about the fundamentalist fight there in Texas to rewrite history, literally the history and social studies textbooks in public schools. Since theocratic religionists have taken over the state school board there at the Texas Education Agency and are deleting Thomas Jefferson and the constitutional principle of the separation of church and state from history texts in Texas.
And that's hard to say that, isn't it, Dan? It's an ongoing battle, and I think Ryan Valentine will also tell you how you can help, since the final vote on this doesn't come until May.
Now we want to return to the very pleasant subject of our trip to New Zealand and Australia, and we did not fall off the bottom of the earth. We found a way to stay attached. We vacationed in New Zealand, Annie Laurie and I. We weren't working in that country, but we did have the pleasure of meeting with some free thinkers for dinner, some humanists in the capital city of Wellington one evening. They informed us that 32% of the population in that country is non-religious.
And with the stunning natural beauty of New Zealand, beckoning Kiwis, as the New Zealanders are known, as why would they ever darken the door of any church? Because in New Zealand, there's oceans and bays and beautiful volcanic lakes. All the water is turquoise, it seems like, and geysers and rainforests and the Milford Sound.
Where Annie Laurie and I at the Milford Sound did the famous 33.5-mile Milford Trek. It's known as the finest walk in the world. Started at Lake Te Anau.
And that lake is so clean that the tea and coffee we were served on the boat taking us over Lake Te Anau came unfiltered from that lake.
And it ended all the way over the McKinnon Pass, all the way down in the fjordlands at Milford Sound, which actually is a fjord.
Not a sound.
It's not a sound, but they didn't know that back when they named it. It's carved by the glaciers. It's been described as the eighth wonder of the world, and it's very beautiful.
And in fact, throughout the three-day hike, we drank only from rivers and lakes and waterfalls unfiltered, and it's a preserved wilderness area.
So the supernatural has a hard time competing with the natural in New Zealand.
There still is pressure to conform in that country, though, because we read in the papers while we were there that bus signs by atheists were censored. It's a familiar story. And these were the same message as those put up in London a year ago. That message goes, there's probably no God, so quit worrying and enjoy your life. And that was deemed too controversial. So obviously there's still some education to do in New Zealand, but they are way ahead of the United States in terms of secularity. We immediately noticed, didn't we, Dan, the absence of crosses, which usually clutter up the highest spots in this country, you know, any hill or mountaintop. Just not there in New Zealand. Also a lot fewer churches. And so, Dan, why don't you tell us about Australia, since I didn't get to go on, and You were representing the Freedom From Religion Foundation at a number of events there, and there was a main event, right?
Well, in 7 days, I did 8 events, 4 speeches and 4 debates. But the main reason I went was for the first ever national Rise of Atheism conference in Melbourne, which was put on by the Australian Atheists. And it was wonderful. There were more than 2,500 people there.
And it was sold out early, right?
And they said they could have had room for 4,000 people because there was such a long waiting list. Really energized, just people from all over the world, but a strong showing of Australian freethinkers, including a new student group that's now being formed of at least 20 student organizations, a Free Thought Association of Campus Atheists and Agnostics.
And you were on the program. You spoke right before Richard Dawkins.
That's right. He was the final speaker of the day. And it was just really energizing to have that room full of non-believers to be able to speak to.
And who else spoke at the conference?
Peter Singer, the ethicist, spoke there. Taslima Nasreen was quite moving about her story about the fatwa over her head because in Bangladesh she criticized religion. P.Z. Myers was there. There were some local...
You were asked to MC a comedy night, and they had some famous Australian comedians there?
There were a number of them, including a group called The Chasers, which in Australia is a big show. It's kind of like The Daily Show here, where they had done a bunch of outrageous but investigative reports. And I got to MC that night and then listen to, and they tailored their very funny remarks to our entire convention.
Well, and you got to make some preliminary remarks. What did you tell them?
Well, you know, I said, you Australians are too polite to say this, but you're probably wondering what the heck is wrong with America. Well, I represent America in more ways than one as an American Indian as well. But I think the difference is because both of our countries were settled by rejects from England. Well, you got the convicts. But we got the Puritans. So who got the better deal? And there's a lot of laughter about that. I think it shows why America still has a long way to go to catch up to, like New Zealand, a country in Australia which has a high level of secularism.
And you did a lot of other public speaking. You were saying lots of campus groups. Where all did you go and where did you speak?
I spoke at a campus in Canberra, the national capital. I spoke in Wollongong, which sounds very Australian, at a university, did a debate there.
And where is Wollongong?
It's just south, about an hour south of Sydney.
And is it an island?
No, it's just it's a city on the coast there, very pretty. I spoke in Bundina, which is another city on the coast. And by the way, I took an early morning walk on the beach there, where the old Aborigines had lived. And then I accidentally surprised a wallaby in the brush there, which was, we were both kind of surprised. And before I could take his picture, it hopped away. But that was a nice little moment.
And, well, you told me that the Aussies said that a lot of Australians never get to encounter a wallaby in the wild.
Yeah, unless they're going to one of those parks or something. That's right. A lot of birds, a lot of wildlife there, which was pretty fascinating. I did 4 debates there, including a debate with the Archbishop of Sydney. His name is Cardinal George Pell, the very first day that I arrived.
Well, we will be talking a little bit more about that in the second segment, and so don't miss our upcoming interview on the second half of the show with the Deputy Director of the Texas Freedom Network about how fundamentalists are messing with the social studies and history curriculum in Texas. That impacts the rest of the nation. In the next segment, we will play and talk about some of Dan's excerpts from Dan's famous debate with Cardinal George Pell, Archbishop of Sydney, and Australia's most senior Catholic clergy person.
I'm Dan Barker with Annie Laurie Gaylor for Free Thought Radio. Let's go out with a little taste of the Maori haka. This is a very fierce, impressive sort of war dance, I guess. I think this starts out actually with a woman chanting, and then the men join in. If you were seeing this and not just listening, there'd be a lot of posturing, eye bulging, grimacing. They stick out their tongues. It's a pretty impressive display.
Hi, my name is Tom Blackburn. I'm from Lebanon, Illinois, and I'm on Free Thought Radio.
protect the First Amendment. It protects you. This is Free Thought Radio.
I'm Annie Laura Geller with Dan Barker.
Coming up on the second half of today's show will be Ryan Valentine of the Texas Freedom Network to tell us what in heck is going on in the state of Texas over the fundamentalist rewriting of their history and social studies curricula.
And we want to devote this segment to the highly interesting experience my co-host Dan Barker had in Sydney, Australia a few weeks ago.
It was March the 11th, my very first day ever in the country of Australia, and I got to hit the ground running with a debate in Sydney. I debated Cardinal George Pell, who was the Roman Catholic Archbishop of Sydney.
And what was that topic?
The topic was, without God, we are nothing.
And who chose that topic?
The cardinal did. He had written an article. He wrote an article about that, which I read. And basically, a lot of his opening statement, he just reread that same article. And the student organizers, Radar especially, R-E-I-D-A-R, a Norwegian living in Australia, and then Tristan and a bunch of other students were very, very helpful with organizing and chaperoning me and getting me to all these campus events around the country. With Cardinal Pell, in fact, I didn't call him Cardinal Pell or His Eminence, as he was being called. There were nuns in the audience and some guy dressed up with a kind of brown clerical garb and a whole bunch of Catholics there, plus a whole lot of freethinkers. I just called him George and he called me Dan. And I think what bothered him more than me criticizing God or his church was that I was treating him like an equal. And he didn't like being treated like an equal. In fact, after the debate was over, we started off very gentlemanly, but after it was over, it was a little bit of sparks flying. We got together to have our agreed-upon group photograph, and George Pell looked at me and said, "No, I don't want my picture taken with you," and he walked away. So,
well, considering that he has been accused of, but not found guilty of pedophilia, you might have felt the same way about him.
Yeah, I was trying my best to be as gentlemanly as possible.
So we thought that listeners, you out there, might want to hear some highlights from this debate. And it was actually broadcast nationwide on what station?
ABC Radio broadcast
throughout the whole country of Australia. So it was a big deal. And the videotape is available online at go to ffrf.org, I think, under What's New, and you'll probably be able to find it. And so I know, Dan, that you were tempted to say to the Archbishop, since the topic was you are nothing without God, maybe without God, you are nothing, Mr. Archbishop, but you were too polite to go that route.
That would have been a very ungentlemanly thing to say. But.
So let's start with a short clip from your opening statement.
Without God are we nothing? Tell that to those millions of good people who find that it is true, there is no purpose of life, nor should we want there to be a purpose. If there is a purpose of life, that cheapens life. That makes us less. It's like the hymn that says, God, you are everything and I am nothing. If there is a God, we are subservient in the universe. We are secondary. We are children. We are slaves. If there is a God, we are truly nothing.
So, Dan, you were saying that life has no meaning individually.
I'm just saying there's no purpose of life, but there's purpose in life.
And we get to that in a later clip. And so, in fairness, we should play some of Pell's statements. This is the Archbishop of Sydney debating Dan a few weeks ago.
God is beyond space and time, not part of the natural order, and therefore not open to observation by the natural sciences. I believe that we cannot arrive to God within the framework of science because God is outside science and time.
So did you hear what he said? He says God is not open to observation by the natural sciences. We can arrive at God within the framework of science, but see if you can spot the contradiction between what he just said and what he says in the following clip.
I've got quite a splendid book here by a fellow called Anthony Flew. He was, his publicist claimed that he used to be the best known atheist in the world, British philosopher. His most controversial claim in the book is, as I quote, that of all the discoveries of modern science, the greatest discovery of modern science is God.
Well, I somehow missed that discovery myself, and of course Flew, unfortunately, in his older years, became a deist, right? But Dan, tell us the contradiction there about what Pell started off with and then what he's saying.
Well, he just told us the greatest discovery of modern science is God, right? But before he had told us that God is not open to observation by the natural sciences. So which way is it, you know?
But and of course, there's no proof of a God, so that's kind of a silly statement anyway. But
and I did point out that Antony Flew, at most, is a weak deist, not a theist, by the way.
But here's a remark by the Archbishop in his debate with Dan that, if you listen closely, is inadvertently rather funny.
Some have alleged that life might have arisen by chance, but calculations and experiments have shown that the odds to be impossibly high. Moving from amino acids to life, there's one chance in 10 to the power of 40,000, an unimaginable number. The number of subatomic particles in the Eucharist is 10 to the power of 80 or 81.
So we think that the Archbishop meant the word universe. Instead, he said he used the word Eucharist.
The number of particles in the Eucharist is 10 to the 80. That's right. A huge Eucharist.
So as taking him at what he meant, Dan, what do you say to that?
Well, my rebuttal, of course, pointed out that with the multiverse, which many, many more scientists are taking seriously, the odds are much, much greater that a universe like ours would come into existence. And in fact, if the number of universes is 10 to the 50,000th power, it would be a miracle if there were no universes supporting life.
So here's a part of your former reply to that at the debate, and I think this is a good zinger.
If you buy a lottery ticket and you win against stupendous odds, are you going to say, wait a minute, the odds were too great, I cannot have won this lottery? Are you going to say that, or are you going to take the money? It just seems like a miracle when it happens to you. Well, we have won a cosmic lottery here. Billions and billions and billions of potential universes are stillborn. They are dead. There was no form. There was no gravitational attraction for whatever under these scenarios. So your fine-tuning argument doesn't hold water.
So at one point, Dan, I understand you quoted Bertrand Russell, who once famously said that all ontological arguments, that is, arguments for the existence of God, are based on bad grammar, and the Archbishop kind of misunderstood that, and this is his not very nice advice to you.
If Dan thinks that the laws of nature are just bad grammar, I suggest he step out the window and see whether the laws of gravity are functioning.
So, you know, I think it's kind of ironic that the Archbishop of Sydney is quoting back to you the laws of gravity, as if gravity, a natural law of the universe, presupposes a natural force. But the irony is, of course, that the Catholic Church persecuted the quote-unquote discoverer of gravity, Galileo, forced him to live and die under house arrest and recant at threat of torture, and has only apologized to Galileo in our lifetime. But what you were pretty surprised at that suggestion that jump out of a window.
Did you hear? We were on the third floor, by the way. And did you hear the people laughing kind of eagerly when he said that to me? I pointed out to him that I didn't say that the laws of nature are bad grammar, but that the arguments for a God are bad grammar.
So let's listen to the closing response by Dan in this debate. Without God, you are nothing.
Thank you all. There's too much to say in 2 minutes. But for the record, many of the questions I asked George were not answered directly. The falsifiability question, or the question about what is a spirit, included the word power. A spirit has power. But power is work over time, and that's a force, and a force is measurable. So I think there's an incompatibility or a confusion in his definition of what a spirit is, if it has physical effects and yet it's not a physical thing. But I just want to end by saying this. A lot of people come to their faith in God not contemplating the ontological argument or by thinking about the number of chances of an amino acid forming a 10 to the 40. No, most of you came to it for other reasons, a sense of meaning, of purpose, of justice, and a sense of community, perhaps, or of morality. I said earlier that there is no purpose of life, and that is true. In the cosmic picture, we are just like the dogs. We are just like broccoli, but in the immediate picture, life matters to us here and now. There's no purpose of life, and if there were, it would cheapen our lives. It would make us secondary. But that doesn't mean there's no purpose in life. Atheists and agnostics, and in fact, all of you believers as well, you find purpose in life whenever there are problems to solve, whenever there's knowledge to gain or beauty to create, or inequality to eradicate, or the oppression of women, often taken by religious institutions, the denial of rights, such as the denial of gay rights, often taken by religious institutions. As long as there's inequality to eradicate, as long as there are hunger to lessen, as long as there are hospitals to build, as long as there's music to write, there is purpose in life. I'm a father. I have kids. I actually have created somebody. Unlike George, I know what it's like to be a father, I presume. I know what it means to have those the paternal feelings. And that gives me an immense feeling of purpose, know that I'm participating in the future of our species. So don't despair that there's no purpose of life, because you create your own purpose in life, which is the only kind of purpose any of us are ever going to find.
I'm Annie Lohr-Gehler with Dan Barker. Free Thought Radio will be right back after the break to talk with a representative from the Texas Freedom Network about what's wrong with Texas fundamentalists going after textbooks again in that state.
Hi, my name is Adrian Angelosi from Glenview, Illinois, and I'm on Free Thought Radio.
This is Free Thought Radio with your hosts, Dan Barker and Annie Lohr-Gehler.
I'm Annie Lohr-Gehler with Dan Barker.
And we have on the phone with us from Austin, Texas, Ryan Valentine. I guess for Ryan, every day is Valentine's Day, isn't it? Ryan Valentine, he's the deputy director of the Texas Freedom Network. We want to talk about the revisionism and the rewriting of history of Texas social studies curriculum that's been making a lot of headlines, unfortunately, and what the Texas Freedom Network is doing about it and what you can do about it.
So welcome to Free Thought Radio, Ryan Valentine.
Happy to be here.
Now, for listeners who may have been out of the country 2 weeks ago,
like me,
or missed this news, can you summarize what is going on in Texas?
Well, we are in the We're in the final stages of revising the state's social studies curriculum standards. This is a once-a-decade revision that our State Board of Education conducts, and it has really left the tracks at this late stage. To review just a little bit, in January, the board was given a draft of those standards prepared over the last year painstakingly by the state's social studies teachers and reviewed by subject area experts from colleges and universities around Texas. And when that document landed at our State Board of Education in January, they immediately began offering amendments to those standards, over 300 over the course of two meetings in January and March, that had the net effect of shifting those standards far to the right and, in a number of cases, injecting the political and religious beliefs of certain board members into those history standards. And the reason it has caused such news around the country is those standards will, after they are passed at the meeting in May, be used to write the next generation of history textbooks and economics textbooks in the state of Texas. And because of the size of our textbook market, those books are often used in other states all around the country. So the decisions made here in the coming days literally will be the history that kids all over the United States for the next generation learn. And there's plenty of reason to be concerned about that.
Well, before we go into the details of what's wrong with all of these, probably 300 amendments have something wrong with them, can you give us a little of the background on the kind of, I guess it's a fundamentalist takeover of the Board of Education?
This board has been notorious for many years for fighting the culture wars in Texas classrooms. About 20 years ago, it became a target for social conservatives in Texas, and actually beyond Texas because of its influence on textbooks, and they began slowly but surely building a bloc on the board who voted in lockstep with one another, who ran for the board not because they cared about good pedagogy or sound textbook, but because, as I said, they wanted to use it as a venue to fight the culture wars to maximum benefit. And in 2006, the number of that bloc of really extreme religious conservatives swelled to 7 members on this board.
And how many are on a 15-member
board? On a 15-member board. And so, at that point, they had a near majority and began drawing their 8th vote on these critical issues from other members of the board, either moderate Republicans who also served on the board or even sometimes Democrats. And the profile of the board raised with last year with a huge high-profile fight over how evolution was going to be presented in science classrooms in Texas textbooks. And the board members succeeded in inserting into those science standards a number of creationist-inspired weaknesses, quote-unquote, of evolution that are going to be in the next generation of textbooks when they're presented here. And now the next subject matter that they address, social studies, as I said, they flex their muscle even more clearly and are basically getting whatever they want. And as a result, this document, which was a consensus document written by teachers and experts, now looks less like a curriculum and more like a political manifesto in many ways.
And I just have one other background question, which is is there a Secretary of Education, and does the Secretary of Education have any power over the Board of Education?
There isn't. There is a Commissioner of Education in the state of Texas, and he is a political appointee appointed by our governor, in this case Rick Perry, and has been very reticent to weigh in at all on these board decisions because, as you might have heard, our governor probably agrees with most of them. And in any case, statutory authority to write the curriculum in Texas lies with this 15-member elected board that are elected in partisan elections from enormous districts. And then they're given carte blanche to write the curriculum standards, pass them on a simple majority vote, and then adopt textbooks that accord with those standards.
So the position of the Texas Freedom Network is that you probably would like to see that whole thing restructured because it's just asking for trouble, isn't it?
That's it, precisely. And this is what the word we've been trying to get out to all of those who are upset with what they've done in the social studies standards or previously what they did with the science standards. It's the process that's broken that's leading to these sorts of outrageous decisions by the board. Other states, even other southern conservative states, don't politicize their curriculum and textbook decisions like this. They don't hand it over to partisan politicians to do line item edits to curriculum prepared by classroom teachers. It's just a bad way to write the curriculum. And we think into the future, so long as the process remains like this, we can expect similar results. Maybe even swinging with the majority on the board. It's almost no better to have the other ideology controlling the board. If teachers and students have to guess from year to year, based on the political leanings of the board, how they're going to approach subjects that should be straightforward, like history and science. So yes, we've started a campaign here in Texas and are recruiting folks all over the country who are concerned about this that we're calling the Just Educate campaign, which is calling on the legislature in Texas to revoke the authority of this board to write curriculum, reformat how we make these decisions in Texas so we get the politics out of the classroom.
Well, that sounds like the best route. But now let's get into some of the nitty-gritty that is probably going to appall some of our listeners about some of these really egregious things like, you know, basically downplaying Thomas Jefferson and promoting instead Thomas Aquinas. Tell us what's going on here.
Well, the roots of the Christian influences on the founding and overstating them in our curriculum here go back almost a year when board members were allowed to appoint quote-unquote experts to advise in this process. And a number of the board members from this extreme social conservative bloc, instead of appointing academics who had done work and had experience teaching in the area of social sciences, they made political appointments. With a name you might be familiar with and your listeners might. One of them was David Barton.
Yes.
David Barton.
The wall builders.
Not a historian, no advanced degree, never taught history.
He's a Sunday school teacher, basically. So he's their expert, huh?
He runs a political activist group called Wall Builders and that is at the forefront of the Christian revisionist history movement.
What's so ironic about the title of his organization, Wall Builders, is that it exists to tear down the wall of separation between church and state.
It does. You're not the first to observe that. And Barton, in addition to not being qualified and having a very long track record of misrepresentation of America's history, is a political activist. He had just finished a 10-year term as vice chair of the Republican Party of Texas. He had no qualifications other than that he shared the ideology of this dominant group on the board, and yet he was named an expert advisor to the process. And if you can go back and review the public comments he submitted first to the writing teams and then before the board and in public, he's insisted at every step of the way that what he thinks the hidden Christian history of America's founding and the biblical foundations of our founding documents, as he sees them, should be emphasized in the standards.
I can understand.
And the result, go ahead.
I can understand, you know, creationism and the science thing, but this is social studies then, right? So they're trying to tamper with the basic civics lesson that our high schoolers are supposed to learn then.
Precisely. And the result of Barton's continuous meddling and the activism of this block of board members is at the March meeting just a few weeks ago, where we spent three full days well into the night hearing amendment after amendment to these standards. One of the amendments proposed was a very straightforward restatement of the religious freedom provision of the First Amendment, a provision that students should learn that the founders created the principle of, or enshrined in our documents, the principle of religious freedom, so that the government couldn't favor or disfavor any one religion. I think that's a fairly uncontroversial restatement of the Establishment Clause of the First Amendment. And it was not only voted down by this board and left out of the standards, it was voted down with extreme prejudice. And there was a long and lengthy diatribe from several of the board members who explained the founders never intended separation of church and state, that it's a liberal invention of the 20th century, that in fact the founders did want to privilege religion over no religion.
Wow.
All these comments made right into the public record, and that very key protection for religious freedom, the First Amendment, was voted down by the State Board of Education.
So if this passes, would they be legally vulnerable then? You know, what happened in Dover at that school district level? Wouldn't the state of Texas then be vulnerable to unconstitutionality?
We'll have to see, of course, how this all plays out in the end. They won't, as I said, take a final vote, and the standards won't become the law of Texas until the May meeting, if they complete their work at that meeting. So we'll have to see what the standards finally say. And we've visited with a few First Amendment scholars who are watching, of course, very closely what's happening here in Texas. And I'll tell you at this point, there's kind of mixed opinion about the religious influences mentioned in the standards now and whether they constitute, on the face of them, a First Amendment violation in the standards. But we'll really find out how effective they've been in inserting their ideology in this area into classrooms when the textbooks are submitted here in 2 years to these standards.
Well, we'll talk about that.
According to the First Amendment scholars that I talked to, that's the point that they would become especially susceptible to a lawsuit if they've gone too far.
Let's keep talking about that after the break. I'm Dan Barker with Annie Laurie Gaylor. We'll be back to talk some more with Ryan Valentine of the Texas Freedom Network about Texas fundamentalists and textbooks once again in that state.
Hi, I'm Bob Byrne. I'm from Dubuque, Iowa.
I'm Cindy Byrne from Dubuque, Iowa.
And we're on Free Thought Radio.
Ask for a sample issue of Free Thought today and find out more about the Freedom From Religion Foundation at ffrf.org or phone 1-800-335-4021. This is Free Thought Radio.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor with Dan Barker for Free Thought Radio, and we're speaking with Ryan Valentine of the Texas Freedom Network about the takeover of the Texas Education Agency by fundamentalist Christians with a big agenda, specifically this year to rewrite social studies curriculum to further their aims and delete the references to the separation of church and state.
So, Ryan, give us some more examples of egregious tampering with Texas textbooks.
Well, of particular interest to your listener, of course, will be the fate of Thomas Jefferson. There's been a lot of reporting about this. At that same meeting in March, members of this religious conservative bloc targeted Thomas Jefferson's name in a world history standard that was about the influence of Enlightenment thinkers on political revolutions in the 1700s and 1800s. And, of course, Jefferson fits very nicely into that particular issue, but he is obviously well known for his views on the separation of church and state, originating that phrase, and so he is not a favorite of these particular folks on the board, so they made a motion to remove him from the standard.
So he's not one of our founders anymore? Is that it?
Well, he is still in the American History Standards here in Texas, so his name still does appear in that context, but this was in a World History Standard specifically about the influence of the Enlightenment on political revolutions, and they not only stripped Jefferson out of there, they also stripped reference to the Enlightenment altogether out of there and made it instead just a standard about important philosophical thinkers, and in Jefferson's place, they inserted the 13th century Catholic theologian Thomas Aquinas and the 16th century Protestant reformer John Calvin.
No, you know, John Calvin, who personally
murdered somebody at the stake in Geneva.
Theocracy.
Right.
In Geneva in the 1600s. Yeah, I mean, the antithesis of the separation of church and state that Jefferson so eloquently argued.
But this is smart, isn't it? Because Thomas Jefferson and Thomas Aquinas, they're both named Thomas, so what's the difference?
That's about how much thought these board members sometimes give to these changes. And I have to tell you one other story about something silly that's happened here. And although it's not as serious as the deletion of Thomas Jefferson or the rejection of the First Amendment, I think it illustrates how broken this system is in Texas and what a bad idea it is to let unqualified partisan politicians to turn them loose on standards to do whatever they want. At the January meeting, one of the board members impromptu announced that she was disturbed that a writer, children's author, named in the third grade standards to encourage kids to read, she had done some internet searching on him and found out he had written other books critical of capitalism and that he was, in fact, argued for the benefits of Marxism. And she didn't think that third graders should be exposed to that kind of thinking. So without any further information, the board voted unanimously to take Bill Martin's name out of the standards so kids in the third grade wouldn't be exposed to this type of thinking.
You got some really smart
Martin,
third graders.
Exactly. So it turns out Bill Martin, there are two of them. One of them is an economist who's written lots of scholarly papers critical of capitalism, some of them. But there's also a Bill Martin who's an author of a very famous children's book, Brown Bear, Brown Bear, that many of us remember. And in fact, I read to my kids at home.
Yeah, we read it to our daughter.
The board voted 15 to nothing to take the author and Texan, who is author of a famous children's book, Bill Martin, out of the third grade standard.
That is that person still alive, Brown Bear author?
I don't think so. But many of his colleagues still are. He apparently lived most of his life in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, and they rushed to his defense. And with egg on their face, the board had to come back at the March meeting and quietly undo the damage they had done. But I think this shows you, when you let folks who don't have any subject area expertise, who have, many of them, no teaching experience, no classroom experience at all, apart from their own classroom, and some of whom, many of whom, even don't even school their kids in the public schools, if you allow them to line item edit a curriculum document like this, this is the sort of silliness you allow in, the sort of errors that enter the process, and the sort of political ideology that leaks into the process.
And they apparently don't even know how to fact-check using Google. I mean, that's pretty ignorant.
Very true. We at the March meeting, Oscar Romero, the famous Salvadoran bishop who was martyred in the early 1980s, was also stricken from the standards by a majority vote. And the reason, justification for this, was that they had never heard of him. Therefore, he didn't belong in the standard. So this is how curriculum decisions are made. That's how much thought is given to them. And once again, anyone who's concerned about this, and even if you don't live in Texas, you should be, given the influence of these decisions on the textbook market around the country.
Well, Dan,
I would encourage you to visit our website, the Texas Freedom Network's website, tfn.org, and join our Just Educate campaign. And on that same webpage, there's instructions on how to contact the Texas Education Agency and board members and express your displeasure.
And you would like people, not just in Texas, but it would still be helpful for people around the country to contact the TEA, right?
Right. It may be that the shame of the rest of the country is the only thing that prompts us to action.
I wanted to say that Dan and I had just came back from New Zealand, and actually we met a lot of Australians vacationing or working in New Zealand, and one of the young men said to me, well, how much do you learn about Australia? And we had to shamefacedly say there wasn't much.
Or New Zealand.
But he asked specifically about Australia. And I said, we don't learn much about you in the United States in school. And he said, well, in Australia, we have to learn about Australia, New Zealand, the rest of the world, and the United States. Well, my conclusion is that even in the United States, we don't learn much about the United States anymore, not when it comes to civics. And here, we're not just going to, it's not just ignorance, it's actually misinformation that they want to feed a whole generation of school children, and that has very serious consequences.
Couldn't agree more. Well said.
So if we write letters to the school board, should we be careful to avoid big words? Just keep it simple?
Always helpful. And avoid, as even no matter how angry anyone is, avoid calling names and make your advice constructive. You can express your displeasure, but don't turn them off and let them know that, you know, it's important what they're doing and that they do it right.
Well, I think it's mostly the crank people we get who, you know, our crank mail is unbelievable. But I think that most people who support separation of church and state are very balanced in their views. So, but I want to also say that this is really, these 300 amendments are very far-reaching, and there was a lot of interference with even things like what music could make the grade. Like, let's not have rap music, right?
That's right. The board, the religious conservatives, made a motion to remove hip-hop from a standards on different styles of different genres of music. And it was interesting. That discussion was a very, I mean, this was a pure proxy for race. And the discussion on the board really engendered a lot of heat over the issue of race because they wanted to insert country western music in place of hip-hop. and in fact, succeeded in doing so at the March meeting.
So hip-hop doesn't exist, the Enlightenment doesn't exist, the influence of Thomas Jefferson doesn't exist. Do you know what they did with Thomas Paine, by any chance?
Not off the top of my head.
They wouldn't be too happy with the author of The Age of Reason.
Right.
It seems to me like what they want to do is remake the public schools into a kind of a Christian homeschooling curriculum.
I think that's exactly right. Many of them, as I said, do homeschool their kids in a Christian environment and are so convinced of the rightness of that, they want public schools to inculcate those same values rather than leaving them to parents and to religious congregations where they belong.
Now, Ryan, we have a little less than 2 minutes left. There's still going to be a final vote in May, and my understanding is that not everything isn't up yet at the website that got voted on. When are we going to be able to go to the Texas Education Agency, see all the final changes, and isn't there a 30, I guess there's 1 minute left, isn't there a 30-day public time for them to react?
There is, by law. They have to post those on the website. There were so many amendments, it's taken the Texas Education Agency staff an extra long time to get a good, correct copy of the new standards up. The latest we hear from them is that they expect them to be up in the next 2 weeks, and that's right. Then there's an open period of 30 days for the public to comment about anything in those standards.
So it would be very useful for our listeners to get out the word, to go to, is it the Texas Education Agency will have those up at their website?
Yes, if you Google Texas Education Agency, they'll have the link on their homepage.
And are you working with historians by any chance around the country to get in some, you know, scholars to respond?
Yes, absolutely. They've been among the most incensed by these changes. And especially since it made national news, the phones have been ringing off the hook with professors at colleges and universities alarmed by what's going on there. I mean, they realize these kids are being done a disservice because when they arrive in college classrooms as freshmen, they're going to be behind their competitors from other states, to mention from other countries.
Thank you so much for joining us on Free Thought Radio today, Ryan Valentine. Again, the website of the Texas Education Agent or Texas Freedom Network is what?
EFN.org.
Thank you very much.
And now we're hearing some more of that Maori haka in the background as we go out. That was recorded in Queenstown, New Zealand. Thank you, Ryan. Thank you, Brian. Also, Brian Tarani, our engineer and producer. This show is recorded in Madison, Wisconsin. Our announcer is Buzz Kemper. Go to ffrf.org/radio.
Free Thought Radio is a production of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, ffrf.org. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews brought to you by Annie Laurie Gaylor and Dan Barker. I hope someday